Hey guys, so welcome back to the Ring ratings, reflections, and rants. I think I've changed the order up every week on that. But guys, what a huge weekend we had! Obviously, our previous pound for pound king, Sal Canelo Alvarez, being beaten and soundly beaten by Dimitri Bivol. Dougie, you were in the house. What did you see? What happened?
I saw a masterful, brilliant boxing performance, really a star-making performance from Dimitri Bivol. He's a guy you knew was very talented, probably the most talented of the light heavyweights. I think he was going into the fight, he was the consensus number two rated light heavyweight by Ring Magazine, by ESPN, by the Transnational Boxing Rankings Board, by everybody, just behind the unified champion Artur Beterbiev. Beterbiev has those two world titles, so that's significant, and he's just a come forward crusher, a technical pressure fighting punisher. But anybody with boxing eyes could see that Bivol is the guy with the athleticism in the light heavyweight division, the boxing skill, somebody who had an amateur pedigree like Beterbiev, but actually boxes like it, like Bivol boxes like an amateur prodigy would box as a professional. He's got the jab, it's educated, he's got nice punch variation, he's very fast and fluid with his combinations. As Canelo Alvarez noted after the fight, he's an excellent judge of distance. He's very good at controlling and managing distance. So you knew that he was going to bring that to the big dance. But going into this fight, looking at his recent performances, there was nothing that jumped out at you. Yeah, like he hadn't had a wow performance in quite some time. In fact, in sort of doing my research for analyzing the matchup, I had to go all the way back to 2019, March of 2019, when he beat Joe Smith Jr. That's the last time to me he looked like sort of an elite level talent. So I think the consensus was that, Canelo Alvarez would just be too experienced for him, maybe too strong for him, maybe bring certain, professional wrinkles to this matchup that Bivol hadn't yet experienced, like a body attack or whatever. But we didn't see that because Bivol did not allow Canelo Alvarez to really get going. To me, it's like Canelo had a, he was confident in the first two or three rounds, and it didn't take long for Bivol to convince him that, hey, you're not going to be able to hit me with more than one punch at a time. And I'm just as good as you at blocking punches. And in the middle of the fight, I expected Canelo to switch gears, and it was Bivol who switched gears and stepped up his aggression, but it was smart aggression. He was never a sitting duck, and Canelo couldn't lay traps for him, and he just took over the fight.
Tom, let me ask you this. Why was Bivol so effective? And I want to keep the focus on Bivol a lot because at the moment people are saying, oh, Canelo this, Canelo that. I want to give Bivol his due. Why was he so good? Because, there is talk now that they're going to have a rematch down at 168, and people are will saying, well, Bivol might be the better fighter down there as well. So why is Bivol, has he got Canelo's number, or what was he doing that was impressive?
Well, immediately at the jab was from the opening second of the fight, the jab was in Canelo's face, and he diversified it really well. He was taking the power off it now and again, keeping Canelo guessing. Then Canelo would maybe try and edge forward and catch a flush jab. Noticed very early, probably around the third or the fourth round, that he had Canelo biting on a lot of feints. Probably, the most effective feint game that I've seen from a Canelo opponent since Mayweather. Maybe not quite at Mayweather level, but not far off it. And because the jab was scoring, and I think, some of us, especially me, I get suckered in on the fact that Bivol's not been scoring any knockouts, and I think he's had like six unanimous decision wins in a row. Canelo get in there enough. There's no way that Bivol's punches weren't bothering him, because if they weren't bothering him, he would have come forward more often. But he actually was kept honest by Bivol's power. Defense was immaculate throughout the fight. People are saying, oh well, it's to do with size, and Canelo's punches weren't having the same effect. Canelo's problem wasn't the punches not having the same effect. Canelo's problem was actually finding the target. He was barely, I can't remember one massive lead left hook that he always disguises really well by feinting down and switching around to the jaw. He usually lands that in the first couple of rounds. Can't remember any big right hands other than mostly to, intentionally to Bivol's left arm on the defense. But there was so many things working. The defense was incredible. His timing, like Doug alluded to, he would switch gears. Like a Canelo opponent can get intimidated pretty early. He wasn't doing that, and he was choosing the select times to open up and say to Canelo, you know, don't get too ambitious or I'm coming right back at you. And that was actually having a psychological effect on Canelo, you know, changing things up. And I thought Canelo looked out of ideas very quickly. I thought when he went back to the ropes, a lot of people always try to sucker him in. No, I think he's buying time, you know, trying to figure out what do I actually do here with this guy? This guy is a lot better than I anticipated.
Yeah, Dougie, let me ask you this. So when I covered Mayweather against Canelo, what feels like a million lifetimes ago now, his body language was so despondent. You could kind of put it down to age and inexperience, thinking, well, I can't do anything with a guy. I can't hit him. And, you know, it's just not my night. And, you know, the guy's better than me. This was the first night he's had that sort of dejected look about him as well during the fight, isn't it? He's been very much on top subsequently. And even in hard fights, obviously, with Triple G and stuff, he's stayed at it and stayed at the top.
Right, he kept against his Bivol, confidence. Right,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Against Bivol, you know, by round eight, it was like, well, it's not my night.
Yes, yeah. And even before that, as Tom alluded to, the it was visible, the frustration on his face. And in 2013 with the Mayweather fight, he was frustrated by the style. He was he seemed confounded by Mayweather's confidence and Mayweather's ability to get in and get out at will, and his inability to do anything about it. But what I thought, at least at the time, a factor in, you know, what looked like Canelo laying an egg, right? And really, in retrospect, he just lost to a great fighter, and he wasn't, you know, he hadn't come into his own yet. But what I thought was a factor at the time in real time was that, yeah, Canelo had headlined some big shows. He put butts in the seats in Texas and in Los Angeles, and of course in his native Mexico, but he'd never been a part of a mega event where you had to do the press junkets and all of that leading into the fight and the pressure of the big fight promotion. And then the bright lights on fight night under the biggest stage in all of sports. I thought he froze up a little bit, like he was tight early. And that wasn't a factor against Bivol. He came in feeling very much at home, maybe complacent even. As I said, he started the fight with a lot of confidence, but it didn't take too long for Bivol and his talent and his style to put a dent in that confidence. And it wasn't like he was frozen by the moment, but he was out of ideas, and he was so frustrated that we saw in the 11th round, like, he almost body slammed Bivol. And that's like out of frustration when fighters do that, when they get into a clinch and they pick a guy up, or, you know, they either body slam him or like kind of think about doing it. That tells you something. That's just like, God damn, this sucks. I can't believe it. I can't believe the fight is almost over, and I haven't been able to inflict any damage on you. Not being able to land those intimidating punches early in the fight to take command. It really took away his game, and you really have to give Bivol credit for that.
Let me stay with you on this one, Dougie, because I see you've tweeted about it. Scorecards, talk to me.
Oh, those cards are horrible. God. And it just, in a way, don't get me wrong. I'm not excusing the judges. In a way, I see where they were coming from in scoring those first four rounds for Canelo, because Canelo, his presence in the ring for those early rounds was like, yeah, I'm the man, I'm the boss, I know exactly what I'm doing. And Canelo has been around, despite just being like 31, 32 years old, he's been around long enough and has been in enough big fights that his reputation precedes him with the judges. Kind of like Muhammad Ali in the mid to late 70s, right? Well, Ali sometimes in fights would win rounds when he's doing the rope-a-dope, right? Judges are looking at Ali and they're saying, Ali knows exactly what he's doing. He's going to tire this guy out. So this guy is falling for Ali's tricks. This guy is playing right into Muhammad Ali's game plan. So Muhammad Ali is in control. So Muhammad Ali is winning rounds. You know, this happened when Ali was like his defense against Ron Lyle. He was trying to rope-a-dope Lyle. And, you know, he wasn't doing anything, right? But Lyle was, you know, trying not to tire himself out, but he was the guy throwing punches and landing some punches. And then you would hear the commentators say, well, that was a good round for Ali. And the same thing with the third fight with Ken Norton, as a matter of fact, a fight that Ali should have lost because he was simply outworked. And it was Norton who was throwing the punches and landing the punches. And so in those first three or four rounds, the best punch that Canelo landed was to the left bicep of Dmitry Bivol. And people are saying, oh, we know exactly what Canelo's doing. He's doing to Bivol what he did to Callum Smith. He's going to take away that left hand. He's going to take away the jab, and then the fight's going to be his. So he's doing exactly what he wants to do, and Bivol's getting hit in that arm. So Bivol's losing, but Bivol wasn't losing. Yeah. After the first round, I had to ask myself that. I was like, ooh, because I was saying the same thing. Oh, he hit Bivol in the arm. He's attacking that arm. He wants to take away the jab. And I'm looking ahead, but I had to ask myself, well, hold on, Doug. After that round, after that opening round, I said, who was landing the punches? And I'm looking at Canelo's face, and it's red. And I'm like, Bivol's landing the punches. Bivol won the round.
Yeah, can I say this is exactly what happened? I get hell on earth for giving Caleb Plant a lot of rounds that other people didn't. For precisely the same reason, Canelo has got this comfort advantage. He just looks the part. He's got the mystique of being the pound-for-pound number one. Yep. He's got all of this going from the biggest star in the sport. So as comfortable as he looks, I think some people tend to get swayed by that and not swayed by the punches that are actually landing. And a lot that he was doing against Caleb Plant, I felt, was landing on the arms. And I'm not scoring shots that are landing on the arms. If Caleb Plant comes back and scores a couple of jabs and a straight right to the body and they hit the target area, that's what I will score. But, you know, I get my ass kicked for it.
Bivol was doing it with power.
He wasn't doing it.
He wasn't punching on the fly. Yep. He was staying in range. That was the and by the way, that didn't surprise me that Bivol did that, but it was a surprise that Canelo was unable to make adjustments. You know, going back just briefly, getting back to the judges' scorecards, you can't justify five rounds for Canelo, and they were doing boxing a disservice. Had that fight, let's say Canelo took the 12th round, right? And that fight was a draw across the board, 114-114. That would have been worse than the dubious draw in the first Gennady Golovkin fight. And I think it would have been on par, or maybe even a little worse than the horrible, you know, draws that Pernell Whitaker had to settle for against Julio Cesar Chavez, or Lennox Lewis, that draw had to settle for. Yeah, against Holyfield in that first fight. It would have been that bad. And it would have hurt boxing just as much as those fights in the 90s did. Those fights hurt boxing a lot.
Yeah, I think
it would have hurt Canelo. Yeah. I think his own fan base would have turned against him had he not lost that fight. So the judges, this is a real problem. And right now, on a Monday, the executive director of the Nevada State Athletic Commission should have all three of those judges in an office somewhere, and they should watch the fight together. And he should have the scorecards in front of him, and he should look at the rounds that they scored for Canelo, especially those first four rounds, and say, okay, tell me why. Explain to me why Canelo won these rounds, all four of them.
Yeah, and I think the thing is as well, like, you know, unfortunately, I haven't seen it too much this weekend because obviously, you know, I think people thought that the scorecards were horrendous anyway. But it's always bad when you say, oh, you know, at least it didn't affect the result.
Right, you know, the right that guy won.
That doesn't justify it.
It really is. Yeah. I'm guilty of it too. I said that. I tweeted that. Well, at least the right guy won.
Well, I was coming for you.
Good, come for me. No, you know, because
it's true.
You breathe a big sigh of relief in real time. Like,
I remember.
I don't got to write about controversy. Well, I get to write about this great performance.
You know? Go back to CJ Ross when she with Mayweather and Canelo. Like, I remember at press row there thinking that was one of the things that led to me leaving Boxing News. I was like, I can't justify that.
No, how
you know, I hadn't given Canelo a minute of a round in that fight, And I just thought it was just extraordinary. And then there was Chris, a sense of relief when I thought, oh, thank God he's got it. Because, like, you know, imagine that.
CJ Ross did the right thing and retired after that fight. Sure, here's the problem. Sure. It's the I call them the usual suspects. There are these veteran judges that turn in scorecards like this. And then next week, they're judging another championship bout.
Well, we have the same
There needs to be accountability. Yeah. They need to be held accountable. Yeah,
it's the same over here. So, Tom, another thing that I saw online, which really it's really annoyed me, actually, and I've not seen it as much for any fight as I've seen for this, is weight classes are there for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what? Like, I think the weight classes are there. Yes, I get the argument. I see what they're saying. But weight classes are also there for these elite fighters to make a real lasting mark and a lasting legacy. This is why weight classes are there. For those guys, the you could probably count on one hand, right? Or maybe two hands at best, the amount of legitimate multi-weight champions. You could count on maybe a couple of hands, guys that have picked their spots and gone up through the weight classes, collecting a belt at different times that don't belong anywhere near the Hall of Fame. Right. Weight classes are there for these guys to legitimately test themselves.
Yeah. Sure.
When you look at the all-time greats, when you look at someone like Bob Foster, who was an all-time great light heavyweight, wanted to try his hand at heavyweight. Sure. Same thing, Michael Spinks. Same thing, Roy Jones. Same thing,
Sugar Ray Leonard. Part of their legacy. When they fall short. Even when they fall short.
Well, obviously, Sugar Ray Robinson was probably the biggest example of losing to a guy who wasn't the world's best light heavyweight of all time in Joey Maxim. But, geez, man, he gave it his best shot against a 175-pounder. So, Tom, what's your thing on this? Weight classes for a reason.
It sounds like a convenient excuse by someone that's upset that Canelo lost. Like, at the end of the day, Canelo, Eddie Reynoso, Eddie Hearn, that promoted the fight, all of them know exactly what Canelo's trying to do. This was his incursion, serious incursion into the 175-pound limit. He was happy to not force any kind of rehydration clause. They knew what they were getting themselves in for.
Yeah.
That, mixed with the fact that it wasn't a physical fight. That this is the thing. This is why size to me, yes, you could say that, you know, and Bivol's got the big durable body, but it was a boxing match. Canelo got outboxed in a boxing match. He didn't get roughed up, tossed around, you know, picked up and slammed on the floor. Nothing like that. He get outboxed through the course of a fight. So it's like a conveniently made excuse when Canelo's entire game plan was to move up to light heavyweight and take over that division. So what you can say is that, you know, I don't think it was a case of Canelo wasn't big enough in its weight classes for a reason. I think on the night, he encountered a fighter that was better. And I think stylistically, Bivol is all out hell for him. I did think it was going to be a tricky fight. Thought four rounds, you know, maybe four rounds to Bivol, eight rounds to Canelo. I think Doug was on the same page. I also didn't think that it was possible for Canelo to lose to Bivol in Las Vegas. I really, really didn't. I could go political with that, but you know exactly where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that he was beaten by a better fighter on the night. To put it all down to size, or predominantly down to size, or weak for Canelo because he jumped up a weight division too far, does a disservice to Bivol.
I've got to say, Dougie, like, this is one of the most fun fight fallouts I can remember in a long time. Like, there's so many moving parts with it now.
Yeah.
And not least, and we've got this great debate going now in the ring ratings committee about what happens now pound for pound. Obviously, Canelo's now lost his number one spot, we'd assume, you know, we'd assume, but obviously that doesn't, what happened on Saturday night doesn't detract from the rest of his body.
Right, it doesn't erase his legacy, doesn't erase winning world titles in four weight classes and facing also the number of undefeated title holders he's faced, you know.
And also the fact it's happened at the weight class it's happened at, right? It didn't happen in his own domain, so to speak.
Sure.
So, but then obviously there's those people who will think, well, you know, Bivol now, he's beaten Canelo, he's got to go above him. Where are you coming in?
And I'm not, see, I don't, I understand that thinking. I understand that thinking, but especially in a divisional sense, like let's say Canelo was rated at light heavyweight and was rated ahead of Bivol. Bivol beats him. Yeah. He takes his place. He has to be rated ahead of him. He just won. But in a pound for pound sense, it's different. You do take in body of work to an extent. It's also what have you done for me lately and how good have you looked lately? And Canelo Alvarez definitely did not look like pound for pound number one on May 7, sharing the ring with Bivol. Bivol did look elite. How elite did he look? I don't like to, and I pose this to the ratings committee. I'm not against Bivol entering the pound for pound rankings, but I just wanted to say, I wanted to pose the question, does he automatically have to be rated pound for pound because he beat Canelo Alvarez? This is one fight. This is his first elite fighter that he's knocked off. And we've seen in the past, sometimes you see guys in the pound for pound and you're thinking, you know, whether it's Antonio Margarito or Ricardo Mayorga, and you're like, man, how did he get to number six pound for pound? And it's like, well, he beat Vernon Forrest. Well, how did Vernon Forrest do it? Well, he beat Shane Mosley. I'm like,
And
Mosley beat De La Hoya. And you have this, like, you know, and suddenly, you know, Corey Spinks is in the pound for pound and pretty high. And you're like, you're looking at Corey Spinks's record. And I'm like, yeah, is he really that good? You know, it's like, well, he beat Ricardo Mayorga, who beat, you know, Vernon Forrest, who beat Shane Mosley. And with Shane Mosley, you're like, okay, Mosley had worked his way into the pound for pound as a lightweight and then made a big jump to welterweight and beat De La Hoya. And that's how he got up there. You know
We've kind of got this now, haven't we? We've got Lomachenko loses to Teofimo. Teofimo loses to Kambosos. Where does Kambosos go? Does he go pound for pound?
Did that age well? Did that decision age well? You know what I'm saying? And I posed that to the ratings panel, and I think we're still debating it.
And then I know that obviously we've caught flack for not putting in Shakur last week. Mm-hmm. And I kind of can see both things, but obviously this is a guy who's now started cleaning out his division. But you know, so maybe he should be in there on merit. But now does Bivol come in above Shakur, who might be 11 or 12? And you know, I don't know. It's all subjective. I find it fascinating. I mean, one thing I did text Tom on Saturday or Sunday after the fight was, you know, the one fight that I'm more enticed by now is that Canelo trilogy with GGG. I'm more fascinated by that fight now than if he'd gone and swept through Bivol, or if he'd widely outpointed Bivol. You think, oh, well, Golovkin's showing his age, you know, Canelo is, you know, on form. Now with Canelo, you know, with his, you know, perhaps a loss of confidence, you know, he's going to have to lose weight to get down to 168. Golovkin's, you know, coming off a decent win over Murata. Like, you know, there's moving parts that make that fight more enticing. Tom, let me ask you this. So, you know, it looks like Bivol Canelo will go again at some point, but say it didn't. Do you reckon there was any way that Bivol was going to get the winner of Beterbiev Evans Smith, or is that a political thing that we just could never get?
Political thing that will make it very difficult, I think, to be made. I need to say this, just going back to pound for pound very, very briefly, but pound for pound becomes a popularity contest. Doug and I have encountered this before. Same thing happened with Srisaket Sorongvisai, who did not get a pound for pound rating for beating Gonzalez the first time. Now, granted, that was a controversial decision. Did not get a pound for pound rating for almost putting Chocolatito through the floor in the rematch, and didn't get his pound for pound rating until he beat Estrada, Doug, I think.
Yeah. So
there's three high quality wins. Now, I'm willing, I said this to the panel at the time, I'm sorry, but if that was an American, you know, plenty of bling, or if it was someone even in the UK, right, that you can identify that bit with, or, you know, that looks pretty cool and turns up in magazines and is never off your TV screen in interviews, then you tend to give them the benefit of the doubt. But a little kid from Thailand that comes up, you know, eating out of bins by his own admission and all that stuff, you get nothing to identify with him. And I think to some extent, Bivol might fall into that category, but sorry for sounding off on that. Regarding Smith and Beterbiev, I like Beterbiev in the fight. I wouldn't put it beyond Smith being able to hurt Beterbiev. I think he's got the punching power to be able to do that. I don't think it would be as big an upset as what we just watched if Smith was to win the fight, but I do favour Beterbiev. No, I think that it's a difficult fight to get made politically. Eddie Hearn's going to be going gung-ho to get Canelo back on top somehow. And I foresee at least a seriously big offer being made to Bivol to come down to £168 and for them to contest Canelo's titles in the rematch.
Which means that obviously Golovkin's going to be the bridesmaid waiting for this high money price or high price trilogy fight, or he's going to go elsewhere. And we've seen Billy Joe Saunders, Chris Eubank, and a few others sort of start to think, oh, maybe we could get the Golovkin fight now. We'll have to see where it goes. Dougie, take away, you know, in terms of ratings, and I don't mean necessarily who's now the best and who's second best lightweight, but how do you have Bivol and Beterbiev? Who do you think wins that fight?
I like Bivol. I like his style over Beterbiev. And as a matter of fact, I could be crazy. I think Canelo could fight Beterbiev this year and do a maybe not win, but do a hell of a lot better against Beterbiev than he did against Bivol, given the style. Because Beterbiev is flat-footed. He's very methodical. Not as fast, not as athletic. He's strong, technical. I mean, excellent pressure. And maybe that would take its toll over 12 rounds. But I think the first 6 or 7 rounds would be gangbusters. And I think I could see Canelo teeing off on better BA.
I agree with that 100%.
I'm pronouncing these names. Sometimes I say Bivol. Sometimes I say Bivol. Sometimes I say better BF. Sometimes I say Beterbiev. I just want to apologize to those fighters.
When you talk about
both ways are wrong, you know.
Yeah. When you talk about Beterbiev or Beterbiev or however you're gonna say it, I was there obviously in Philly when he beat Vozdich, and I mean the guy is a monster. He's you know, Vozdich, trained by Teddy Atlas at the time, was a real threat. Like, I think they were possibly 1 and 2 at the time, certainly 2 of the very best around. And it was frightening, the pressure, but also the power. Like, it seemed like this was just a big version of Golovkin.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Which is he doesn't, his jab isn't as elite as Golovkin's jab was and remains. But he's got an excellent work rate for a big man.
I don't think his timing isn't as good either.
He's getting long in the tooth. I mean, I think it's possible that Beterbiev is dying on the vine a little bit. We'll see how he does against Joe Smith Jr., who is a physical threat, at least has a puncher's chance. But I, you know, getting back to your original question, Tris, I like Bivol's athleticism and his boxing IQ, his ring generalship. I think his lateral movement can give Beterbiev fits, and I think he's a better athlete. A little more of a natural than the Nail was. And I also think the Nail obviously had issues, you know, coming off that fight with Adonis Stevenson. I don't think he was 100% psychologically. I really don't.
Yeah.
Going into that Beterbiev showdown. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Bivol he's riding high right now. I mean, he didn't lack confidence, obviously. I mean, he was up for it. He seized the moment in the biggest stage. He was not intimidated, didn't freeze up under those lights. And now he's proven to himself that he's an elite level boxer. So I think
very similar.
He boxed very well.
Yeah, very similar composure, I thought, to what Usyk displayed against Joshua. Going into the lion's den, tons and tons of pressure, and just, it must be that Eastern European mentality, just so wired in to get the job done. Like, his composure was incredible.
So, Tom, let me ask you this. Rematches. I don't want to spend too much time dwelling on this. Firstly, what do you think of this? It seems like every time an A-side loses, they're guaranteed a rematch, regardless of what's going on. But if if the money guy loses, he gets to do what he wants in the next fight. Secondly, if you're Eddie Reynoso, do you say, "Yeah, we want Bivol again," or do you say, "Hang on"?
I think no way at 175 from what I've witnessed there. I watched the fight again today, and to be honest, Canelo didn't have a look in. And how do you turn that around? How do you, I just don't see it at 175. The only way I can see the rematch being made is exactly what I said. Make it at 168 pounds and hope that Bivol basically, beyond kills himself, turns himself into a zombie to make 168, which I'm not sure he would. I think he would be disciplined.
He said for years that he can do it. Yeah, he said for years, bad move if they do that, though. Well, the public are like, hey, yeah. You used your influence, your A-side influence, drain this dude.
You know yourself.
That's how you're going to get your revenge. That's not
Leonard,
revenge.
Leonard did it with Lalonde, and you take the negative feedback and all that.
But people did not like Leonard for that.
He guess the last person to care was Sugar Ray Leonard. I spoke about it, and just he laughs his ass off. He loves the fact that you know, I could do what I want. I was the diva, you know, and Canelo's in the same position. And we've seen it down the years with all, you know, whether it be Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, you know, took Canelo down a couple of pounds. You know, we've seen this before. So yes, it would piss people off, but it's like boxing. All it would take is something else to come around and everyone's attention will divert to that. And forget about the fact that Canelo dragged him down 7 pounds. I don't put that past Team Canelo in a million years. Eddie Hearn, if he's going to make the rematch, will be dying for them to do it, because
I think it's a bad look. If you're going to go back down to 168, fight Triple G, David Benavidez, Charlo to step up.
His pride will be hurt. You know, he's just had his ass well and truly kicked. And I think going down to fight Golovkin, I don't know if he could get motivated for that coming off this fight. I think if they can...
Really? Can't get motivated for Golovkin?
I think he could previously... Yeah, but if he's on top of his game, like he was before, like on Friday, I'll go down there, I'll kick his ass, right? But after just being tuned up and embarrassed in front of the home crowd, he was well beaten. I wouldn't say a shutout, but not far off it. He didn't have a look in. I don't know if he can go into camp with the same gusto that he could have prior to this fight. I think his main goal as the athlete and the competitor is to get back to the guy that just made him look like he doesn't belong. He's off the
table. It's personal. He's not thinking about business. He's not thinking about fans. He's thinking about, I got to set this right with myself.
I need to avenge before I can progress with my career defeat. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. That's what
I get it.
Guys, This is great. I mean, we are absolutely all over the show. There's so much fallout from this, like I said, and it's all like there's so many options and so many possibilities.
Upsets are good for boxing. Upsets are good.
Yeah, it's good. It opens things up. I agree. It's also good, though, when you have that marquee name that everyone draws to that guarantees, you know, hey, remember we had that long period of time where basically Mayweather and Pacquiao were drawing a million pay-per-views each, regardless of who they fought. Like, you know, that's not bad for the sport. It's just obviously even better when the best guys fight each other. I was going to mention Charlo fighting this weekend, but we'll hit the Charlo stuff and Castagna next week. Guys, before we go, though, I will give you a rant each.
This is going to be good.
Yeah, brace yourself. Dougie, you can kick it off. Canelo should stay number one pound for pound because he sells bundles of the Ring magazine.
Not because he sells bundles of the Ring magazine, because he's keeping boxing, big time boxing, afloat. He's a huge attraction. The moment he steps in that arena, it's going to be a packed arena. It's going to be live. It's electric. So what if he lost to 175 pounder? Mickey Walker lost to Tommy Lohgren. Dick Tiger got knocked the F out by Bob Foster. They're still all-time greats. Canelo's still number one pound for pound.
Great. I love it. Joe, I'm still waiting for one of these clips to resurface on my timeline where someone's just taken this completely out of context. Tom, you're up.
That's how it's done.
Tom, Bivol goes in at number one because he beat the man.
Well, you just said it yourself. Canelo... you know, multiple championships, multiple divisions, best resume in the entire sport. He was number one pound for pound. So by inference, you just slot Bivol right in there. He displayed amazing tactical awareness throughout that fight. Nothing to do with size. He just took the guy that everyone thought was the best fighter in the world and kicked his ass. That'll do me.
Okay. You had a couple of seconds left over there. So,
you can't just give me done for that.
That's a tough one. Sorry. Dougie gets it 115, 113. Sorry.
There you go.
Brilliant. Damn,
you got a future as a Nevada judge, Tris.
Yeah. That's great. Well, I've got the same qualifications. Guys,
probably overqualified.
Guys, this has been a lot of fun. I look forward to doing it every week. And I mean, like I said, I think this is really exciting in terms of where everything goes for these guys, and not just these guys, but the other guys in 160, 168, 175. Let's see how it all shakes out. Guys, it's been a privilege, been a pleasure, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.